Welcome to Built Brave. Driven women sharing their stories to show others what is possible for them. Because we were all born brave. I'm your host, Lo Wentworth, and this is Built Brave. Are you ready? Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Built Brave podcast. And so, Katie, can you take it away and let everyone know who you are and what you're about?
Yeah. So, hi, everyone. I'm Katie Grimes, and I am a sober dating coach. I work with clients internationally who are really just trying to increase their confidence when it comes to love. And I'm sure we'll get into this, Lo, but there's sort of like three phases of people that I work with and have all different kind of attachment styles, whether it's secure or anxious or just feeling like they're avoidant. And so I really try to help people look at what has caused them to feel that way or act that way in their love lives so that they can be in a healthy and a happy relationship.
So what is a sober dating coach?
Well, it's two things. The first is a sober dating coach is someone whom teaches other people who are sober from drugs and alcohol how to date. But it's also those who are looking to think thoughts, feel feelings, or to take actions that just make them feel really good about themselves when it comes to their love lives. And then as a result of that, it actually makes other people feel really good about themselves. So I coined this phrase because I'm sober, but also in the 12-step recovery room, they actually have this concept where when you stop dating, you take time off from dating so that you can really, you know, work on yourself and really get good at feeling more confident within yourself. It gives you the ability to like take time off and then start dating again. And when you do, they coined this phrase like sober dating. And I thought to myself, you know, I've been sober now for 5 years, but like alcohol and drugs weren't really my thing, actually. What was more my thing was actually being addicted to love. Like I just really wanted someone to love me and to get love and affection from other people so that I could feel good about myself. And it was literally bleeding into every aspect of like work, family, friends, the way I spent my money, the way I was sleeping with people. And I was just like, this is freaking exhausting. If I like keep going at this clip, I'm like, I'm either going to burn out. I'm either going to wind up pregnant and married to somebody who's super unfulfilling, or it got so bad that I really felt like I didn't want to live. Like the pain of feeling like I wasn't good enough was just really, really bad. And so it's a kind of a long-winded answer for sober dating, but I wanted to share that because I think there's a big story behind really what sober dating is. And I get this question a lot, Lo, which is like, do I need to be sober from drugs and alcohol? Or what if I'm the kind of girl that like likes to have a drink now and again? Like, would you work with me private coaching or group coaching? And I always say that I would. It's just we have to go on a date first. Like we have to do a free call and see if we're laughing at the same shit. And if you truly believe that love is love and you are someone who's spiritual, because I think it's really helpful to be able to ensure that we're speaking the same language, you know?
I think that's important on so many different levels, not just in a coach and client relationship. Let me see if I actually like you and you get my sense of humor, even if it's like morbid or super dry. Like, you don't want those awkward moments in those conversations.
Exactly. Exactly. And especially when you're making that big of a commitment, whether you're dating somebody or whether you are going to get a coach. Like, I feel like it's just really important that you take the time to actually get to know somebody. And a big component of what I talk about is that, you know, with my coaching, I really try to help people understand that, like, I'm teaching you how to trust yourself so that you can go and trust other people. And then when you trust yourself and then trust other people, we're practicing how do we trust each other in private. So then that way you can go out and do it with other people and it becomes really easy and effortless, you know?
Mm-hmm. So then why did you decide to go into coaching? I know we'll get a little bit deeper into your background, but let's start there.
Yeah. So Well, I was working in corporate America for years. Like ever since I got out of college, I was always chasing the corporate dream of the corner office with my closed-toed shoes and my, you know, friggin' blazers. And I was constantly chasing this dream of like wanting to make more money and more money and more money. And I always felt that I was super unfulfilled regardless of how much more money I made or how closer I got to the corporate office. And to fast forward, I mean, this is a journey of if somebody's asking themselves, like, how do I find what my passion is? How do I find what my purpose is in life? Hopefully this will give you a good indication of like where there are signs and symptoms throughout your life that's already happening now. But for me, I went to a Gabby Bernstein retreat. She's an author on, you know, spirituality and meditation. And I'm sitting in this and she says, you know, we're going through a meditation and the meditation was like, you know, just whatever first thought comes to mind, I want you to go ahead and I want you to write it down. And I wrote the word sober and then I went to go cross it off and she was like, don't cross it out. You know, she's like, I want you to just whatever came up, just honor it. And so it took me a little bit, but about a few months after I got out of that meditation with her, I realized that I actually wanted to get sober from drugs and alcohol. And I had already been in 12-step recovery for a while through Al-Anon because my mom had suffered from alcoholism and I'd already been working with someone who had more experience. She was like a coach to me. And I really liked the dynamic of us talking every week. I liked the ability to be able to reach out to her in between sessions. It didn't feel like therapy at all. It just felt like, what's up for today? What is really going on? How do I change this so that I feel better about myself in the moment? So that always stuck with me as being something that really worked well. And then to fast forward, I ended up deciding that I was working in a commercial real estate firm and I really liked the fact that there was all these men who I was working with, but it made it really difficult to actually see if there was any other women within commercial real estate. It's predominantly white men that work there. And I was like, I want to create a networking group where I did this with a friend of mine, where we ended up working out and then instead of having drinks afterwards, we changed it so that you would get a smoothie. And we thought that people would feel like really uncomfortable about that, but everybody, because commercial real estate is big, big booze and heavy partying all the time, it was like, oh, let me see if anybody's going to respond to this. And they actually loved it. Like they really were like, oh, it's kind of nice to not be boozing all the time. And then to fast forward to like, why did I decide to coach? Like I was talking to people about getting healthy and happy like all the time. And I really love that. I started to become kind of the go-to girl within commercial real estate and even amongst some of my friends who were in like 12-step recovery to really understand like, how do you date and how do you incorporate food into your life so that you feel less depressed and less anxious? And so, or like natural beauty products. And why is that important? And I started realizing that like, had this gift and this ability to relate to people who were going through the same feelings, but they felt like they were the only one. And I was like, and Lo, I'll pause you there. There's so much more to the story because something traumatic happened that actually I got fired from my job, but I just like, instead of keep it going, I figured I would just pause and see if like anything sort of resonates from there. Or do you want me to keep going?
Before we get further, just so people who know, what is Al-Anon? Because not everyone would know what Al-Anon is.
Yeah, absolutely. So if you've ever had somebody in your life who is addicted to drugs or alcohol or work or gambling, sex, love, you name it, Al-Anon is a place for you as the family member or the friend or the girlfriend or the lover to go and actually get free help. And you sit in this group, and now they're virtually, where you can either get quiet and just listen, or you can actually share about your own experience with whatever the topic is. So the topic could be like setting boundaries, or the topic could be about higher power. And what's amazing is here you have perfect strangers internationally talking about the same thoughts and feelings that you have around this person whom you love really deeply, who keeps getting fucked up, and yet you feel fucked up because they are, you know? And how do you not go crazy? And so that's Al-Anon, is it gives you the ability to have a free resource to actually go in. And it's not therapy by any stretch of the imagination, but I do call it, gives you the ability to like work on your emotional fitness, kind of like you would your physical fitness, you know? And I highly recommend anybody who's interested in learning about it, you can just type in Al-Anon, A-L-A-N-O-N, and there's virtual meetings like everywhere at all hours of the day.
Yeah. I asked that question because I've had a couple of friends who are like, yeah, I go to Al-Anon. And I'm like, what the hell is Al-Anon? Like, what is this? And for me, it's just like, you know, it's the, I don't want to say the sober AA, but it's like AA, but like you said, you're the person who's not in AA and is trying to figure out how to support that person. Or like you said, create boundaries where you're just like, you know, I love them, but I have to like love them from afar. So again, like another place where people don't feel like they're alone.
Yeah.
Which I think is very interesting. And I think that should also be talked about more, because people talk about AA all the time in the 12-step program, but they never really talk about, you know, what's out there for people who are family members or friends trying to support this person who has some sort of addiction and just doesn't know where to turn.
Yeah, I think that's really helpful. I think keep in mind too that why we don't hear about it very often, and it's interesting. We do hear about it in AA. We do hear publicly AA talked about a lot, and that's because it's the founding 12-step program. So every program out of that was created out of the 12 steps that AA was created upon. So you're right. You hear about AA a ton. And there's a stigma around it. I think there's a lot of shame and a lot of guilt. People don't like to be associated with it, or meaning like those that are newly getting into program are like, ugh, hey, don't talk about it. Those who've been in AA for a long time and those who've been in Al-Anon for a long time, they shout it from the rooftops because it is the thing that saved my life. What's interesting is I got into Al-Anon thinking that it was going to save my relationship with the person that I was dating, who was suffering from sex, love, and fantasy addiction, but he was also suffering from alcoholism. And what I found was that I ended up finding myself and ended up learning that I actually had a bunch of addictions, a compulsive need to want to be loved. And as a result of that, I was doing a lot of things like spending money or trying to dress certain ways or flirt with certain people that would allow me to feel better about myself. And I think it is... it was really meaningful a few years in to stop shifting the blame on from him onto myself and say, and I shouldn't say blame, but like I was blaming him for a lot of shit, and then being able to turn the finger back on me and be like, wait a minute, it's not them, it's me. I keep dating the same people.
Mm-hmm. You're the common nucleus of it all. I call that like taking responsibility for the thing. We can talk about that later, because in our pre-conversation, we were like, the experience, not an experience. And we'll get to the listeners later about that. But that's where I kind of like, that's like you're taking ownership of whatever it is that's happening instead of projecting it onto someone else.
Well said.
Which is sometimes a heavy pill to swallow, because then you're kind of like, oh, shit. Like you said, you're like, wait a minute.
No, it's so much easier to blame other people.
Oh my God, it so much is.
It's not easier to blame other people when you start to get healthier. When you start to feel more secure with who you are and why you're doing certain things, like it doesn't, it's still, the blame still comes. Like you still go to like, oh, he doesn't do this for me or she doesn't do that for me. But then immediately you're like, oh, so what's my part in it? Like what expectations did I have on them that I never communicated? I'll give you a quick example. I'm at like a level 10 the other night. I am like rocking and rolling. Just had like the best day at work. I was celebrating something really big that's coming up. And I had a date with my boyfriend later on in the evening. And I didn't tell him throughout the day that this really exciting thing happened. So when like I get out of work and it's a little bit later, I'm like, oh my God, babe, do you want to walk downtown? Let's go get dinner. Let's go get an ice cream. And he's at like a level 1. Right? He's not coming out for ice cream. Like it's not happening. So I'm like, all right, instead of going to his house, not having eaten, not feeling resentful, instead I was like, cool, I'm going to go get takeout. Do you want anything? Nope, I don't want anything. Okay. I'm going to go get takeout. I'm going to go get ice cream, and then I'll be by in your house in an hour. He's like, okay, sounds good. I'm like, I'll eat my dinner with you. And like, I had a totally different attitude. The old me would have shown up, not eaten, and then like resentful. I'm like, how come you must not love me. And instead it's like, no, I'm just going to go take myself out and then I'll see you in an hour. Mm-hmm. Totally different energy.
Isn't it interesting how you get to that point? Like you're enjoying, you're having fun. You're being like, nope, okay. I'm not going to be around this person. I'll be there later. If they don't want to do it, this is what I want to do for myself.
Totally. And like, there's always the fear of other people's opinions of you. But I found for me that if I want to show up as a secure and healthy partner, I mean, it gave him the option. Do you either want to come out to dinner with me or do you want me to pick you something up? You couldn't give me an answer for both, and that's okay. So I'm gonna go do my thing. And, you know, later he asked, he's like, were you mad at me? And I'm like, no, I'm not mad at you. He's like, well, you just seemed annoyed. I was like, well, of course I was, because like I had an idea in my head of what I thought this was already going to be, but I never communicated it to you. So when I asked you, like, what do you want to eat? You couldn't even give me that answer. Like, I realized, like, we hadn't even talked about this. So it's okay. I'm just going to have to let it go. Go get myself dinner.
I can't be mad about you if I haven't told you the thing.
Right.
So interesting. Also, I love the fact we're rewinding back to your story before you hit pause about, like, going and having smoothies instead of drinks all the time. Mm. I don't drink. That's a personal choice that I have with myself. Like, I had a rule that if I got deep into the dumps that I wasn't going to drink, and then law school happened, and in the middle of my 2L year, I sat there and like, shit, I'm not happy. And what have I been doing? Having a whole bottle or a glass of wine every single night. So then I just stopped.
Mm.
And so that even that from then on, I just don't drink. But it's really interesting to see people who do drink and have their insecurities come out because I'm not drinking.
Oh my gosh, Lo. I had the same thing happen. So I gave up booze for the same reason as you. Like, I found for me personally that it was just a choice. I like had grown up with alcoholism in my house. And I was like, if I know then what I know now, like, would I rather just quit drinking? And I was making decisions, doing dumb shit when I was drunk, and I was doing dumb shit when I wasn't drunk. So I realized that wasn't the common denominator. The common denominator was actually how I felt about myself. But you're right. Like, so for me, I had a couple wild nights out, and wild nights meaning like slept with like somebody in my industry. Then I went to a bachelorette party. Then we came back. We went to more work events and I was just fried. And then by the weekend, next weekend, I was out with a girlfriend of mine who I was hanging out with quite a bit. And I had two or three drinks and I was like cradling the porcelain the next day. I was like, how is that possible? I only had two or three drinks. But the reality was, is like, she was my go-to girl. Like, she was the one I would go out with all the time to like pick up guys or flirt with them or. And what I didn't realize is that, you know, in a way, we were both kind of enabling each other's behavior of not feeling good enough and thinking that boys or booze would solve it. And so what ended up happening is as I stopped drinking, I remember one night she got pretty shit-faced and she was like, oh my God, you guys like want to go home? By the way, we're walking to the next bar. So she's like, you guys want to go home? And like, I need to be out with people who want to drink right now. And I was like, but we're going to the next bar to go dancing. I don't understand what you're talking about. And I was like, just because nobody else wants to drink in the group right now doesn't mean we don't want to go out and have a blast. I was like, why don't you get some water or get another drink? But either way, like, cut the shit. Because I realized that that was her stuff, you know? Mm-hmm. And for a long time, Lo, I didn't tell people that I was drinking and I felt bad at the time. And some of my friends in commercial real estate really thought that I was lying to them, you know, but I wasn't. It was just, I didn't want to explain myself. It was my choice.
I found it's hard for people to understand that, like, when you choose not to drink, they feel like really awkward that you have to have some sort of excuse. And I'm also like, even like there'd be a couple times since law school, I would drink or have a couple drinks. And the next day I would just feel like shit. I just would feel like groggy, gross. And I just didn't like it. So I just don't. And then, but they're like, well, why not? And I go, I don't have to. I don't have to drink to have a fun time. And plus, quite frankly, I don't want to feel like shit the next day. Like, no, I'm not about that.
Yeah, I'm with you, girl. Like, there's no reason to have to explain it. So my good friend, Amanda, she always used to say to me, how come when we go out and some guy tries to pick you up and he asks you why you don't drink, you give him, like, more than just the response of, I just don't drink. And I was like, I have no idea. She was like, you don't need to explain it. I used to be like, I don't do it. Stomach hurts. Or if he was like really hot and I was trying to earn his trust, I'd be like, oh, I grew up with addiction. Like, I'm good. You know, like, and somehow revealing more of my truth would make them like me more. No. So now I just say, like, I got invited to on my roof deck the other night. And they were like, oh, cool. I have beers. Like, I'll meet you up top. And I was like, I don't drink. Oh, okay. I'm like, I'll bring some water. I'll see you up there. Like, it doesn't change the dynamic. It is what it is.
I kind of just like, you can drink. You can do whatever you want. I just don't want to. So stop. Like, I had an episode where some former friends of mine, they're just like, oh, we're going to get you shit-faced for 4th of July or, you know, some like sneaky way. And I got real pissed at them because I'm just like, no, this is my body. You don't get to do that shit. And I go, yeah. I don't care if you think I have a stick up my ass. There are better ways to say it other than being like, we're going to get you shit face. And I'm kind of like, no, no, thank you.
Yeah.
Since then, I've distanced myself from them, but I'm just sitting here. I'm like, dude, boundary lines.
I've been on both sides of that where I've tried to do that to other people. And then I've also had it done and it just feels, you know, it's shitty on both ends, right? There's an insecurity. There's like an insecurity that plays a major role of like, you know, wanting it to be the best night ever. And it's like, how many nights out do you just like, after a while, it just gets tired of going to the bars all the time and doing the same shit and taking a lap to see if there's any talent. Like, it just gets old after a while. So I relate to that. But you're right. It's like your body and you get to do whatever you want with it and you don't need to explain. What's what?
Yeah. And I think that's also been one of the hardest things. Like you said, like oversharing about why you don't drink. It's like not taking on someone else's discomfort because you're just like, I just don't. And they're trying to get more, feel more comfortable about it. You're trying to make them feel comfortable. But in the end, it just gets all messy and wishy-washy.
Well, I did the same thing for when I wasn't dating. So when I stopped drinking, about a year later, I decided that I would give up the boys for a little bit too. And when I say give up the boys, I do not mean that I did it on my own. I think this is a common misconception amongst people who decide that they're not going to date. And they're like, oh, I'm just going to like work on myself. I needed an actionable plan. I needed to know what I was working towards. And for me, I was working towards being more secure in a loving and committed relationship with someone whom I could trust. But I wasn't attracting people I could trust. I certainly wasn't in a loving relationship, and I certainly didn't feel healthy emotionally, spiritually, financially, physically, you name it. I was actually really anxious, like all the time at work, in my love life. Like it just was all over the place. And I was like, well, if I can take one aspect of my life and which feels like it's at a boil right now and I can bring it down to a simmer. And what was interesting is I was still going out all the time and not drinking and like not dating people and not giving my numbers out, which was a hard habit to do right at the beginning. Like somebody asked me for my number and I gave it to them and I was like, oh wait, I'm not giving my number out. Like this is not how we do this anymore. Is also not trying to over-explain to them why I'm not dating. And also not be intrigued by someone who might be interested in me that I could eventually date in the future. I had to be really, really mindful of that. So it was really nice because I had a coach during that time who I could text or call and be like, oh, I'm away in Newport, Rhode Island for the weekend. And I'm seeing this guy and he's really great, but like, he's asking me if I'm dating anybody. And I really want to say no, but I should be able to date in 3 or 4 months. And you know, how do I not say that, you know? And really learning how to become really comfortable with being really uncomfortable around other people's opinions of me.
I think that's really hard for anyone who has some sort of like people pleasing or seeking validation in others, is to be comfortable and in uncomfortable situations or someone's disapproval of you.
Yeah, I think people pleasing and caring about what other people's opinions of us are such common characteristics. And thankfully, there's a lot of great conversations like the one we're having, as well as podcasts, et cetera, where people are talking about it more and more, because it does drive every action or thought that we have, is when we care about what other people think of us. And, you know, I think for me, when I decided to take time off of dating, I really had this fear that I was going to miss out on finding the one. But the faith that I would meet someone who could be a loving and secure person and who wanted to be in a loving relationship with me, was the faith was far greater than the fear. So that's what motivated me. So I would say to anybody who's trying to take time off or figure out kind of where they're at in their dating life, I'll walk you through the three phases that I have that I can help people kind of assess where they're at. But I think it's really important to be able to look at why are you doing it? Like, what results do you actually want to see in your life? Because what you want to see and why you're doing it are two of the most important questions that you can ask yourself. Because then that way, Lo, every decision that you make going forward, literally every decision that you make going forward will be always guided towards that roadmap. It's like me and one of the listeners saying like, oh, we're going to go to California from Boston. It's like, okay, well, there's like three different routes that you could take. North, you could go west, or you can go down south and west. And it's like, well, if I know that the destination is California, it depends on where in California I want to go and what do I want to see while I'm taking the route. And I really needed to be like that specific of like, how playful and fun do I want to make this time for myself so that I can actually stop being so anxious. But I got to tell you, like, it was probably a solid year before I stopped feeling so anxious, because these thoughts and these behaviors and these feelings, they were ingrained in every single thing that I was doing, from who I texted to stalking on Facebook to, you know, seeing a hot guy and wondering like, oh, is that the one? Is his cute puppy and he, are they the one that I'm going to be with? Is this why I'm seeing them on the street? Like, it really bled into everything.
That's so interesting. It's like its own addiction in itself, except it's just for like, from what I hear, is seeking love and approval and a validation that you're enough. Yeah. Because you didn't internally believe it yourself.
It's well said. And I think people who are sober from drugs and alcohol, they understand the difficulty of trying to let go of those substances, which once gave them a lot of pleasure, but eventually created so much pain and discomfort in their life that they needed to let it go. It's also really, and I think anybody can really understand this concept of being addicted to love. You know, this compulsive need to want to seek validation or to have somebody else love us just so that we'll feel good enough and that we'll feel loved. And, you know, I've often said that I think love addiction is more common than that of alcoholism and drug addiction. And the one thing that bonds us is the shame and guilt, right? The shame and guilt that here I am, even like not feeling good enough or not feeling loved. And therefore I have to like seek other people out to try to fill up my cup. Mm-hmm. And that was a big part of my journey. I think eventually I had taken, you know, about a year and a half off from dating. I had really worked a 12-step program that gave me the ability to focus in on love and focus in on this idea of just even educating myself about what sex addiction or fantasy is, which is really this, again, compulsive need to want to have sex or compulsive need to fantasize so that you'll feel good about yourself and get yourself out of the reality of how you feel today. And taking time off from dating gave me the ability to figure out who my friends were. If I was passionate about my career, if I wanted to go back to school, I actually applied to a grad school that I never, ever, ever would have applied to had I not had the time away from dating. And also to look at my fears, like what did I actually really fear about my life and why those characteristics were actually driving me to take actions in my love life that constantly made me feel like shit. Whether it's I text this guy on repeat, like after we'd leave a date, and then we'd be up all night texting, or then it would turn sexual, and then me feeling really hungover the next day, even though I didn't drink. And it was like wondering when he was going to text back again. It was just this constant door swinging back and forth. And what I think the year and a half off of dating did, and doing it with a group, which is why I coach group coaching, is that it gave me the ability to feel more secure in my life, more secure with who I am, what I need, why do I want it, how to find my passion in my career and in my life, and like actually made me figure out who are my real friends. And it wasn't until you had asked a question earlier, like, why did I start coaching? I think one, it had been demonstrated for me by working with people who were coaching me. And I really liked the style of, okay, we talk every week, we talk in between sessions, we were working on actionable items towards thinking different thoughts that make me feel really good about myself and getting out of my head. But then also when I stopped dating, I, similar to any addict, right, is you think that since you've stopped dating, you stopped boozing for a while, that you can go back to the old life, the way life used to be. And Lo is shaking her head for those on podcast.
This is right.
Yeah, she's shaking her head like, yep, is that I decided that I would go away for a ski weekend away with some new friends and also an old friend, the old friend that I had always been partying with before, and that I had not been dating for like a year and a half. And to make a very long story short, is one of the guys that weekend raped me a few times, and then he also sexually assaulted me multiple times. And, you know, for someone who constantly was seeking attention from other people, there was this very weird dichotomy of like, wait, did I signal that I wanted, like that I thought he was attractive, or did I signal that I wanted that? Did I say no? And you, if anybody's ever been in a car accident, it's the same kind of thing where you're like, say you're the one that gets in the car accident and you're like, shit, was that light red or was it yellow? Was that light green? I thought it was green. And then I thought I turned my right blinker on, and wait, I did hit the brake. What time was it on the clock? Like you start like going through this like quick images of what you see flashed on TV of like the whole scenario. And you try to think like, and this is what I did talk about blaming myself, is trying to figure out where did I go wrong? And I think what was so beautiful about that is the PTSD, which is very similar to postpartum, if anyone on the podcast has ever had it, is, you know, your body is super resilient. Your body bounces back. The bruises went away, things like that. But like, my mind kept thinking it was happening. My mind kept thinking that I was in trauma and that I was in fear. And so what ended up happening from there is I wasn't able to work. And I lost my job. And that's how I got into coaching, is I was sitting on the beach, just lost my job. And I looked at my bank account and I just got my bonus from work a few days before. And I was like, okay, cool. I have $20,000 sitting in my bank account. I can actually go and start a business, or I can go back to corporate. But if the goal is to be happy now and to teach others how to be happy, which job opportunity is going to give me the most fulfillment? And I came home from the beach that day because my boyfriend sent me to the beach because he was like, you are kind of a hot mess right now. I think you need to go to the beach. And I came back and I was like, I'm going to start a company. I'm going to start a company helping people to feel more fulfilled in their lives. And hence, it's evolved since that first day. I've done different things since that first day. But yeah, then it slowly transitioned into teaching people internationally how to think thoughts, feel feelings, and take actions that make them feel really good about themselves. And that I know a lot of people actually suffer from not feeling good enough and not loved, and that they reach out for sex or love to make them feel better. And so why not? Let's just talk about it.
Let's have a conversation about it.
Right?
So for the listeners, what I was referring to as the event, let's talk about the event versus calling it rape and ownership, and going through that and how that with the owner, what I call it as ownership, what it really means versus what someone thinks it means when we're like, oh my God, if we call the thing a thing, it's just going to like repeat themselves.
Hmm. So what specifically would you like to know?
So just how the conversation about how, like, when you call, say that you were raped versus having an experience, like, what does that look like? And then someone who comes into your circle and says that something has happened to them, and then discussing to them, like, taking ownership of the thing, whatever the bad thing is, that we like to put distance between.
Yeah, I can absolutely jump into that. So I think there's two things. I think when I was in, so I went after my rape, I went to the Rape Crisis Center, and I worked with two counselors and nine other women who had been through a similar quote unquote experience. Okay. And so I'm laughing while I'm saying this to you guys. It is, I'm now 2 years past being raped. So there's a, and by the way, I've been talking about it more and more on podcasts and was just featured in Medium talking about it. So forgive my humor. That's not a defense mechanism by all means. That's actually me being able to take moments of that time and realize there were very humorous and moments where I was super grateful. And so in one of these experiences that I'm referring to, as we're sitting in group, and myself and this other woman said, I'm sick and tired of calling my rape an experience. This isn't like going to Disneyland or Disney World. Like, that's an experience. Like, having, you know, a 5-course meal in Italy, that's an experience. We both started laughing and we said, we vow to always call our rape by its name. And the reason being, Lo, is I needed, for my personal growth, in order for me to stop twitching, which hasn't happened in a while, but like I twitch sometimes when I get a flashback, is like my whole left side of my body like just starts literally looking like I have a tick. And what I found was that in order for me to heal and remind my body when the tick happens that it's not actually happening right now, like I am safe and I am secure and everything is okay. And even if it's not, I have a restraining order in place. We're going through an investigation still, by the way, so it's 2 years later, and that everything is okay. And I think what I realize is that in order for me to not care about other people's opinions of me and to not shame me for what happened and to actually call rape by its name, because it's often in the media called sexual assault, mm-hmm. which sexual assault is very different in my opinion. Sexual assault is like somebody grabbed you in your boob, on your butt, on your body, somewhere, vagina, somewhere that actually was not warranted, like you didn't want them to. And so that's an assault. Rape is when actually somebody penetrates you and actually has sex with you when you have told them that you don't, in whether it's gesture, whether it's head shake, whether it's verbally, whatever it may, or even non-verbally. There's non-verbal cues. And so myself and this woman had this conversation even after group, and I just said, I think for my own healing, I need to stop giving a damn I don't put a trigger warning anymore before the word rape. Just like you wouldn't if you were talking about a homicide or cancer or any other, or car accident, anything else that is super traumatic and completely outside of our control. So I'm very passionate about it, and there's no aggression in my voice. It's just more like passion. There's just more this like understanding that if we can, as a society, both men and women, all genders, all bodies, all backgrounds, actually talk about the fact that rape is rape and sexual assault is sexual assault and call it by its name, then we as a society can help one another heal. Because even though, Lo, maybe you and I haven't been through the same quote unquote experience of being raped, we have the same thoughts and feelings about it. You've probably likely in your time been in a situation where you have felt completely hopeless, or you blamed yourself for something that was completely outside of your control. And the reality is like, we all know what those feelings feel like. So now it's just a matter of being able to have compassion and empathy for one another.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And I think it's really important, and I say like name the thing, is so like listeners know it doesn't have to be rape, it doesn't have to be sexual assault or murder or any of that. It just like people put those buffers in saying like the experience or try to scoot around naming the thing because of it brings discomfort to other people. But I think it's important to name the thing and taking like ownership of what it is. It's kind of like when you go to the doctor and you get a diagnosis, say it's cancer or say it's something else that you've been trying to figure out what's going on with your body. Then you have an idea of what it is and it gives you some sort of direction and healing versus if you're like vague around it and being like, well, I experienced this. When you don't name the thing, then you don't actually, in my opinion, really heal from it. It's still going to be there until you acknowledge it.
Very well said.
So yeah, that was just the importance of what I wanted to talk about. Yeah, like naming the thing.
Name it. Call it by its name so that you can heal from it.
Mm-hmm. And it's quite counterintuitive because a lot of people, they don't want to name whatever horrific thing happened to it because one, they could think it's giving power away to it. Two, it could be that it's going to repeat itself over and over again. So you were talking about PTSD. I got rear-ended, God, it'll probably be almost a year sometime this fall, but I watched it happen. Like I saw it happening. And then from even to this day, sometimes I'm like, why am I getting so anxious? I don't like the fact that this person isn't slowing down. It's kind of that thing of like, I have to pause and tell myself I'm okay. It's fine. They're slow down. If it's a stoplight, I'm like, I can turn. I can turn, right? There's no one coming if I really need to. But it's like reminding yourself that you're okay.
It's so true. And you know what I love that you just did, Lo, is you shared your own experience of having post-traumatic stress. And even though your experience was different than mine, the feelings and the thoughts are exactly the same. And did you see, audience, how like Lo and I didn't compare each other's stories? One story wasn't worse than the other. We didn't shame or criticize one another. Instead, we just both really related. Like, oh, I know what that feeling feels like to replay the situation over and over and over in your head again, thinking it's going to happen again. And I think so often when people are affected by events that they feel completely powerless or helpless over, is that they often think that they have to minimize the experience by calling it experience, like you said earlier. Mm-hmm. Or by not even talking about it. Or this is what often I've seen is like, well, my experience wasn't as bad as yours, but this is what happened to me. And there's nothing but shame and guilt in that phrase. And so often when people have come forward, which I want to actually just offer to the listeners, like in a confidential platform of you can book a free call with me. And if you're like, hey, I've actually never told anybody this story before, or it just felt really good to talk about my experience of being raped or whatever traumatic event might have happened for you, I'm happy to be somebody to listen from that component, because I think what we're bonded by is that we all want to heal from this, and we all want to be able to walk down the street or go on a ski trip or go drive down the road and not fear that the worst is going to happen, but instead have faith that our experiences have taught us to be a little bit more vigilant, but also trust that we're going to be okay and that we're going to be safe. And if we're not, then it was supposed to be the end, you know, like I kind of have a different energy around it now, which is like, you know, me and my dad, and this is not something to joke about. I have people in my life who have COVID. I'm pretty sure that I had COVID earlier in the year. I'm like, but I'm a big believer after 9/11. I'm a big believer after COVID that when we are faced with such large events in our life that it gives us the ability to be like, so I really am not in control. Mm-hmm. Here I spend my whole life seeking perfection, which is just the fear that we want to be loved, right? Mm-hmm. That's why we seek perfection. But instead being like, if the good Lord's going to take me, the good Lord's going to take me. And for those of you who are listening, who are like, I don't believe in God. Well, yes, but you're here for a reason. You may just not know what the reason is, but somebody else knows what the reason is. and to really truly appreciate, and this is what I've started to learn, particularly ever since the rape, is that I am really on this earth to love and to be loved, to help people who are hurting stop hurting other people, and to start talking, calling rape by its name, but more importantly, start calling love and sex addiction by its name. Mm-hmm. So that people can stop feeling like when they're watching porn or they're masturbating compulsively because they had a stressful day at work, that is an addiction, right? That is actually sex and love addiction. So you can heal from that. And there are plenty of other men and women who go through that exact same experience, even though you think you're unique and special. But I think the last thing I want to share about it, Lo, is that, like, I think so many of us grew up feeling different. You know, we felt special, like not in a good way though, you know, like separate from one another. Mm-hmm. And so we always sought ways to make us feel good. So whether that's dating people who are habitual cheaters or thinking that if we just love them hard enough that we will be the relationship that they don't cheat on us with, right? Or compulsively working to make more money and yet we haven't spent time with our family or our kids in a long time and our weight is suffering as a result and we're not sleeping and we're taking sleeping meds just to like go to bed every night, is that there is really a better, more fulfilling way to live. Like, I really truly believe that the universe did not put us on this earth to be like, okay, so guys, here's what my plan is. First of all, you all look completely different. Okay. Just heads up, all completely different. I did that so you'd hate each other. Right. Like, and then while you're at it, I want you to also like work your ass off, not make really a lot of money. Some people make way more money than you, but you should be completely jealous and ashamed of them and like be completely unfulfilled and really pissed off when traffic hits. Right. Like our universe, our God, our higher power did not put us on the earth to feel so separate and angry and unfulfilled. And I think that my rape has given me the ability to be sitting here talking to you, being fully present, looking in your eyes, but then also every now and then you'll probably see me glancing. And for those on the podcast, they can't. It's because the American flag is literally flying sky high and the wind is blowing it so beautifully that it literally is washing this like wealth of like comfort and serenity around me while the sun is shining and it's really grassy right in front of me. And like, I used to go through life never even noticing any of that shit.
Isn't that interesting how when you realize how not present you are to how all of a sudden you're more present, or you acknowledge the moments where you see like you're going into the hustle and bustle and then all of a sudden you take a pause and you look out your window and you see the American flag flying and you're just present in that moment and would have never noticed that before.
So true. I find that a lot of what I've been working with my coaching clients and in my own life is, you know, when people ask me, how do you start? I just say, start by saying thank you every day. You might not be in the place where you want to make a gratitude list, but I definitely make a concerted effort every day to say thank you, even if it's to somebody holding the door open for me, or whether it's I'm settling into bed and I'm just thankful for another day. It's like that small act of saying thank you goes such a long way, because I think my spiritual life has completely grown. Whereas like the place that I'm living in now, like I dreamed that this place would look like this. And I asked for more guidance and I asked to make it possible because I knew that the more that I gave and the more that I was thankful for what I got in return, that more good things would come. And so I also encourage the people that I work with from a coaching perspective is really to look at, you know, your language. What are the things you're saying? Are you focusing on what you do have? Or are you focused on what you don't have? Are you saying really shitty things about yourself or to yourself about what it means? So I'll give you a quick example. Like I have a client where she was like, oh, I'm moving out of my apartment and I just really wanted my ex to like just show up with like roses and tell me that he's gonna miss me. Like, and he doesn't even know where I live now. And, you know, she started saying all this stuff about like what she really wanted. And I said, can you see that you're focusing on everything you don't have versus what you do have? And can you also see that you're fantasizing about what life with him was really going to be like, but the reality is it will never be that way because he actually, you've asked him to do that for you and he can't. And she's like, yeah. And I was like, but can you see more importantly than any of that, that you're desperately asking yourself to say that to yourself? And she started crying and she was like, that's exactly what I need to say to myself. And I said, well, be careful, right? Because when we say, I need to do this, I need to do that, I should do this, I should do that, we start to shame and guilt ourselves. And again, it can simply be, it would be really nice to say that to myself. I'm going to practice. It's like a lighter, lighthearted way of giving yourself what you really need, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, words are so important. I have a journalism background and then I have a law degree. So words are everything. Sometimes I get nitpicky with my friends. I'm like, really? You said that? And they'd be like, that's enough, Lo. I'd be like, no, we're in this personal development. We're talking about personal development. But do you hear what you're actually saying? Yes, I'll get in an argument over a word meeting. But that's because I'm just so passionate about it. I'm being like, do you not hear what you're saying? What you need to say. And that just like reminds me of my own coaching earlier this month. Like they reflected back to me. They're like, you're shoulding a lot. And I'm like, fuck, I am. It's like one of those moments you're kind of like, oh, I am. Okay. But that's like another habit of when you get into that downward spiral of being like, well, I should. Shame and guilt come up.
Completely. Yeah, I think it's a really common occurrence. You know, Lo, I thought one thing that might be helpful to circle back to based on something we said earlier was talking through the three phases of your love life. Mm-hmm. Would that be helpful?
Yes.
So phase one, I call this anything for love. This is like people who are shitting all over themselves. So when you were saying that, I was thinking that like, I'm gonna use a female as like an adjective, right? Or not an adjective, but like a noun to describe who I'm referring to. But, you know, this woman, she is somebody who is tired and she's working out to be in great shape, but feels like no matter how much food she eats or how much she works out, it's not producing the results that she wants. She's constantly got this one on rotation or that one, or she's got one foot in or one foot out of a relationship and she's just feeling tired and burnt out and feeling like she doesn't know which ends is up when it comes to her love life. And I think the common theme would be like, if she wants to, she would kill for like a day off to just sleep. But even if she sleeps, she feels guilty that she's sleeping. And so she's constantly just going. And the same can be said for her love life. Like she's afraid that if she just takes time off, then she'll miss out on finding the one. And so I work with women in this phase who are willing to be more aware that this is, first of all, that they have this, you know, this compulsion to want to do all of these things so that they will feel good enough, but that they're also willing to move into phase two. And phase two is called showered with love. And that is for women who want to take time off. So they take time off from dating so that they can really focus on learning to love themselves and to focus on themselves and figure out what their passions are and what they want to pursue. And also to get the support that they need so that they can move out of either being an avoidant attachment style, somebody who constantly avoids other people or who avoids getting too close to someone else, or someone who is definitely more of like an anxious attachment style where like kind of feels like they're codependent, like how you think about me or how often you text me makes me feel good enough or not for that matter. And so phase two is really let's take the boil down to a simmer and let's get you an actionable plan so that you can take about 6 months where you're not dating and you are really working on each month or each week. There's these really consistent platforms that we're using about like, how do you stop overthinking? You know, what characteristics do you take from your ex that you really admire and you actually can use those for good? Like, what language are we using? What are we shooting ourselves or are we saying I could instead? and really get her to a place where she feels so secure. Secure within herself, her confidence, her body, receiving love, getting to this place where everything just feels a lot easier and lighter. She's got better friends. Her relationship with her family is stronger. And she's at this place where she's like, all right, phase three, I'm ready to let love in. Now, phase three is like, she's excited, but she's also like kind of nervous because she doesn't want to go back to the way things were in phase one, where she was literally trying to do anything when it came to love. So she's afraid that if she goes back out into the dating field or to get into a relationship, is she going to lose herself? So I literally teach you how to maintain your independence while also depending on someone else to give you what you need, because we really were meant to be on this earth to love and to be loved. And so there's a couple ways to do that. I think one is you can go through all three phases, and you can also upgrade to do private coaching with me in that package. And then you can also just sign on for each one of the phases as well. So try to keep it really simple. So there's group coaching, there's private coaching. There's also digital courses that I offer on my website, katiegrimes.com. And then you guys can also check me out on my podcast, Anything for Love. It is just a really humorous and authentic look at recovering from love addiction. And I bring on some guest speakers now and again, similar to how Lowe's got me on, just talking about different aspects of life and how do you feel more confident in each of those aspects. As well as my annual Summit of Love. So the Summit of Love takes place this year in 2020 on Sunday, November 8th. And during that day, it'll be virtual. It'll be a live event, but it's not going to be like your standard Zoom calls, guys. It is going to be, and by the way, I should interject and say, it's going to be for men and women, which is different. Last year was only for women. This year, all guys, like guys have been reaching out and they're like, me, I want to come. I want to get good at love. And so this is not a place to pick up partners, even though your heads probably just went there. This is really a place to be around like-minded people who really value self-love and self-development. And we are focusing solely on your love life. And so there'll be moments to listen. There'll be moments to jump around and dance and be entertained. But then there'll be also moments of deep introspection and figuring out actionable items that you can take that will make you feel like you're living a life that you really love. And so I wanted to offer for anybody on the, who's listening to the podcast, I will give Lo a promo code that she can put. And Lo, do you want to pick the promo code and I can put it in? What do you?
Well, self-love came to mind.
All right, let's do it. Self-love is the promo code. And I also wanted to share with anybody who is here. You can share that code with your friends and family, right? There's no dishonesty here. You can literally say like, you know, Katie said I can share this code with you guys. We've had people literally last year, people flew in from like Texas to come to this event live, which is so awesome. But this year it'll be international, and this year it will be, like I said, live. And so self-love will be your promo code. You can type it into katiegrimes.com. Once you go into the Summit of Love and you can buy your ticket, tickets will be on sale starting in October. You can actually, if we're good, I think you can already buy them now. But there's limited spots. And I really would want to encourage everybody to like grab their journal, grab their pen. And if they have a house full of people, COVID approved, but like if you have a house full of people, then freaking don't have each one of them sign up. Like that's, you guys can just have your friends and your family at your house and you can be live and in person with us. So I just wanted to throw that out there too. If money feels tight, you're welcome to invite, you know, your friends with you or family members to participate, because this really is about celebrating love and it's celebrating self-love. And I want to give people a chance to do anything when it comes to love, you know?
Well, thank you. And I think that's also much needed right now with 2020 and all of the curveballs it keeps throwing at us, that we're kind of getting lost. For me, it kind of gets lost in the weeds sometimes, where I'm like, why are we fighting again? Why are we getting upset again? Like, we need to come together at the moment. So
totally. And especially with our political environment being what it is and our society being what it is right now, I think we need each other more than ever. Mm-hmm. So it's, I think this will be a beautiful opportunity to all come together, and all bodies, all backgrounds. So just want to be mindful that anybody who comes, there's a couple of characteristics that are really important to me. One, you truly believe that love is love. We have men and women of all bodies, all backgrounds, all sexual orientations, all ethnicities, you name it. And so it's really important to me that you're coming here to celebrate love. And if that's not what you believe, that's okay. You don't have to come. That's cool. And then I would also say that you want to keep an open mind when it comes to your expectations around what the event will be, but also you are open to having conversations around enhancing your spirituality. I don't need you to be religious, but I do need you to, I do want to be able to talk to you in the same way that I would be talking to anybody on this podcast, which is, I'm going to drop the God bomb. You know, I'm going to talk about universe. I'm going to talk about things that are super grounded in our ability to actually get what we want in our life. And the best way that I can do that is just speaking to you like I'm two friends sitting down having a conversation. So, and I would say the third thing would be that you are somebody who really, again, truly values self-love and development and wants to see yourself shine as well as others.
Well, that's a perfect segue into our final questions. Beautiful. If you answer the first one, where can everyone find you? So,
great.
Everyone can find you at your website, sign up for the summit. Sounds like a lot of fun and it is much needed right now.
Yeah, I agree.
What is a book, resource, podcast, or whatever that has provided you a lot of value that you'd share with the audience? Hmm.
So I would say there's a couple things. I'm going to do three things. The first are ACA meetings. They're Adult Children of Alcoholics and Dysfunctional Homes. You can just literally type in ACA meetings on your web, on Google, and check out a virtual meeting. There's like, they always recommend like 6 meetings or more to really get a flavor and feel for if this is for you. And for me, it's really helped me lower my anxiety, lower my depression, really believe that, oh, okay, so this is why I act certain ways, or this is why I tend to people please or care about other people's opinions. So that's one. A book that I really liked, Untamed, if you haven't read it, with every other celebrity or every other woman that exists on the planet. I know Glennon said that her books before weren't great. Her books before made me want to be a writer and made me decide that I am writing a book. But I thought that Untamed did a really nice job at keeping it real and owning her shit and owning the parts of her that were imperfect, the parts that were kind of pretending like everything was okay. And then aside from, I'll be honest, sometimes I go back and listen to my podcast, Anything for Love, because I actually really get a lot from the speakers or even just myself. But I have been really loving The Goop, Gwyneth Paltrow's The Goop. She's just got a lot of great speakers that are on there that have helped me open my eyes to really living a more fulfilled life. So they have Goop Fellas and then they have The Goop, which is more female focused.
I loved the documentary of The Goop.
It was really good on Netflix. Yeah.
Yeah. It's kind of anticlimactic towards the end because they hit you really heavy, at least in my opinion, with like the topics in the beginning, and towards the end, I'm like, oh, well, this is like kind of like good open experience. But at the same time, I'm like, guys, got some like heavy hitting at the beginning. I kind of expected it to be all heavy hitting.
I totally agree.
So what would you say has been your bravest moment so far?
I think my bravest moment so far. It happened about 3 months ago when I decided that I would fully trust the process. I trust the process of being a business owner. I trust the process of being a coach, what clients would come in, how much money I would make, how much money I could give, how I could continue to stay sober and learn from not only the people in my fellowship, but also the people who are clients of mine, and also finding a balance between spending time at work and on my mission and on my purpose of life while also spending time with family and friends. And it was like 3 months ago that I started investing in like all of these courses that I was taking. And I realized that like I was going to go full in on really changing my competence around the business because I've never been a CEO before. And I started asking for help from the universe. I started asking for help from other people. And slowly but surely, like everything has started to come, like the clients, the money, the being able to give to other people. I've never been at a phase of life where everything just feels so calm and really serene. And it feels really great. It makes me realize that I didn't waste my time all those years that I was like trying to hurry it up so I'd feel this good, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I can relate to that. That reminds me of the, I don't regret anything in my past or about myself or anything from past experiences that I've done. So mistakes, whatever, one of those moments, like I should have done something different. I could have done something different. I don't regret that, because if I regret that, to me, that means I regret some part of myself. And if I didn't have those situations or feeling like I was hustling or behind or trying to get to the moment of what you're talking about was bliss, then I wouldn't have gotten there.
Well said.
Yeah. And our final question, what is your definition of brave?
My definition of brave is someone who asks for help even when they don't want to ask for help, so that they can live a life that they love.
I love that. It's slightly different from what I've heard. Thanks. It's a really good one.
Thanks.
Well, Katie, thank you so much for coming on.
Whoa, this was awesome. I can't wait to see you all at the Summit of Love and say hi on Instagram. Like, I don't believe in followers. I believe that it very much is like a two-way street. So if you guys want to follow me on Instagram, I'm at kg.katiegrimes. And I really appreciate you for opening up this platform and giving people an opportunity to hear others' experiences and their gifts and helping us all to be a little bit more brave. It's been an honor.
Hey everyone, thank you so much for listening to this episode of Built Brave. If you love this episode, heck, if you like this episode, please head on over, give it a rate, review, subscribe, like, shout it out on your social media with your major takeaways and what you loved about the episode. And as always, tag me in that at Lo Wentworth, because I love hearing what you guys got out of the episodes. And until next time, remember, you've always been brave.